I really don't know, but I do know that there will be food and games, as well as the music. That brought a smile to Emily's face. I might see some of my friends there. Nodding, she pulled the covers up to her chin, making sure to tuck her doll in as well. I'm glad you're making friends at school, and I'm sure your teacher, Miss Green, will be there also. Another huge smile met her with that statement, and she made a mental note to specifically thank Jade for being so helpful with Emily's transition to Baytown Elementary. Okay, baby girl, it's time for you to go to sleep. With a final kiss, she turned out the light and headed back downstairs. Walking directly to the kitchen, she pulled down a wine glass and opened the refrigerator. Pouring a glass of Riesling, she moved into the living room. Standing at the fireplace mantel, she stared at the framed pictures. The photograph of her holding newborn Emily drew her in. Carl was not in that picture. Taking a large gulp of the wine, she worked to steady her breathing as memories flooded back. Their wedding with his military squad in attendance, Carl resplendent in his uniform, setting up house in a tiny apartment outside the military base. Her disappointment in his immediate tour taking him overseas, working for an accounting firm while he was in Afghanistan, feeling like she was living only half a life, reveling in his trip home, celebrating it by barely leaving the apartment, and then discovering she was pregnant, Skyping with him during her pregnancy until she was due. They even Skyped as she was delivering. Carl taking a stateside position after his overseas tour was over. The feeling of bliss at their perfect life, perfect marriage, perfect family. The concern that turned to fear as they watched Emily appear disinterested in her surroundings and her struggle to speak. Then discovering she was completely deaf in her left ear and had partial hearing in her right. The doctors, the diagnosis, sensory neural hearing loss, the speech therapists, the audiologists, the tears, the fears, the promise she made to her daughter that she would do everything in her power to help her, watching helplessly as Carl began to distance himself from Emily, and then her. The arguments, his refusal to learn basic sign language in case she needed to communicate with her hands instead of her voice. Then came the argument that occurred the night he came home and told her that he had put in for another overseas tour. More tears, more fears. But they fell on ears that could hear but did not care. This tour was unlike the first. Few calls, few letters, no Skyping. Until the letter that came where he said that he did not know what would happen when he returned, but it was too painful for him to be around Emily. That her deafness was something he did not know how to handle. Her tears dried up, and her fears turned to anger. How dare he think that a father could pick and choose the difficulties their child might face? How dare he leave her to be the parent while he simply removed himself from her life? But before she had a chance to let Carl know just how much of a coward he was, the visit came. The chaplain, the commander. Her husband, the war hero, the slain Marine, leaving behind a sweet 3-year-old daughter who already had enough obstacles to face. She accepted the condolences. She buried her husband. She kept the folded flag to give to Emily someday. She had a framed photograph of Carl in his uniform on Emily's bookshelf so that she would have that memento. And deep inside, she also buried the shame of knowing if he had lived, he planned on leaving them both. She wished the anger could be buried as easily. Taking another large gulp of wine, she finished the glass quickly. She kept the photograph on the mantel for Emily, but also to remind herself that things are not always what they seem. The steadiest man can fall short. Blowing out a long, slow breath, she walked back into the kitchen and rinsed out her glass before heading upstairs. Once inside her bedroom, she slipped out of her clothes and pulled on her silk pajamas. A smile slid over her face as she ran her hands over the smooth material. It was one of her few indulgences, but she told herself that the softness made her sleep better. With a shake of her head, she moved into the bathroom. After removing her makeup and brushing out her hair, she moisturized her face. Standing, she stared at the reflection looking back. Carl used to tell her she was the prettiest woman he ever met, and how lucky he was that she accepted his marriage proposal. At the time, it warmed her heart, but now she saw the words as shallow. She had been an adornment, and so had Emily. But when Emily had been less than perfect in his eyes, he had no idea how to cope. So weak. Such a weak man. As she continued to stare into the mirror, she reached over to flip off the light, plunging the room and her reflection into darkness. Climbing into bed, she lay, her mind sliding to her meeting with Aidan McFarlane. Again. There was no denying he was gorgeous. If she let herself, she could stare into his eyes for hours, getting lost in their intensity. He was the first man she found herself attracted to since Carl, but that was just surface level. The first time she saw him, he showed himself to be a player, and then, when they officially met, he judged her nearly instantly. Rolling over, she knew he was exactly what would never be right for her or Emily. He would never be able to accept someone with special needs, someone who had to be placed above all individual needs. As she continued her restless tossing and turning, she wondered if there was such a man. Chapter 6. The music festival was in full swing as Aidan scanned the area looking for his friends. He stood near the band, who was set up in the white gazebo on one end of the park. Baytown was developed on a grid, streets running straight east to west and north to south. The beach was on the east side of town, with Main Street on the south side. The Baytown Park was located in the middle of the town, taking up several blocks in each direction, which made it the perfect venue for an event like this. Blankets and lawn chairs littered the area, and, spotting his group, he walked to the side of the park where his friends had settled. The music could still be heard and yet was not too loud, so conversations did not have to be screamed. As he made his way over, he surveyed who was already there. Mitch and Tori, Jillian and Grant, Lance and Jade, Caitlin and Gareth, Brogan and Ginny, Zach and Madeline, and Belle and Hunter all sat together on blankets spread in a circle. All couples, some with children, some expecting. It really put into perspective how the Baytown boys had grown. Coming up to them, he greeted everyone and kissed his mother's cheek before shaking his father and grandfather's hands. Mitch and Jillian's parents sat nearby, as well as Grant's parents. He waved to them, smiling at the familiarity of the scene. Having noted that almost everyone was paired, he was glad to see several of his single friends were there also. Callan had brought some of his Coast Guard buddies, and Jason was hanging with one of his mechanics. Colt Hudson, the sheriff of North Heron County, and Hannah Freeman, the police chief of Easton, came by to call out greetings, both stopping to chat with the gathering. The music came to a stop, and the crowd turned toward the gazebo, seeing Mayor Banks moving to the microphone. Dressed in a suit, in spite of the heat, he grinned widely at the crowd and said,
"Just giving the band a break so that I can welcome you to the Baytown Annual Music Festival."
As applause broke out, he waved congenially, his jowls shaking as he bobbed his head.
"And I wanted to take this opportunity to remind everyone to come out for the next mayoral election. Of course, I'll be running again and hope to count on your vote to keep Baytown moving forward as one of the best coastal towns in the South."
The applause came again, but Aidan and his friends just grinned. His mother sighed.
"He's a blowhard, but I can't fault what he's done for the town."
Others nodded in agreement before turning their attention back to the gazebo, where the tall, thin town manager, Silas Mills, moved up beside Corwin.
"I also want to say that our intrepid town manager, Silas Mills, will be continuing to serve and has my support as he brings new ideas to our fair city, such as this music festival."
"Oh, posh," Jillian grumbled. "Silas has done nothing but complain every time we come up with a money-making project for the community. I can take Corwin in small doses, but Silas is such a little no-name calling," Tori said, hushing her friend as she looked at her little one playing nearby.
Jillian stopped, but said, "You know I'm right. He's always complaining about our husbands and the whole police department as well." The others nodded, glad when Corwin and Silas left the stage and the band began to play again. Standing close to Caitlin, Aidan accepted a soda and gratefully took one of the sandwiches she had brought from the pub. Enjoying the music, he startled when she called out,
"Leah,
Over here.
Wincing, he turns to find Leah standing almost directly behind him. Unintentionally, his gaze took her in from head to toe, slowly. Her thick, dark hair was pulled back from her face with a clip, the heavy length flowing down her back. A white, lacy, sleeveless shirt was tucked into light blue capris, both showcasing her curves. Flat, decorated sandals were on her feet, showing off pink-painted toenails. Unlike the blatantly sexy women he used to zero in on, she exemplified understated sexy. Suddenly, he found a bite of sandwich stuck in his throat. Coughing, he gasped for air as Brogan pounded him on the back.
Shit, geez, Brogan, way to make it worse.
He glowered at his brother as he tried to catch his breath, then scanned to make sure none of the kids heard his almost cuss word. Are you all right? The soft voice came from the side, and he turned again, looking at Leah, her eyes holding obvious and unexpected concern. Clearing his throat, he nodded tersely, replying,
Yeah, thanks.
Feeling the need to separate from her, he offered a chin lift before walking over to Jason and Callan. As he walked away, he heard his mom ask Leah about Emily, and could not help but eavesdrop on her answer. Emily has a new friend from school, and she's having some ice cream with Judith's family over by the picnic tables.
Judith is a sweet child, Jade said, her smile wide. I'm glad she and Emily are friends.
Yes, it's kind of hard for Emily to make new friends. She's shy, and, well, sometimes other children can be a little, difficult. Hearing Leah speak so derogatorily of other children reminded him of his first meeting with her. Without hesitation, he turned and said,
Like the kids on the ball teams?
Leah blinked, her head cocked to the side as if she misunderstood him and was surprised at his ire.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Her mouth opened, but he jumped in again.
If you'd ease up a bit, I bet Emily could find all kinds of friends that she'd find acceptable, even if you didn't. How you can be so judgmental and put yourself before your kid is beyond me.
He heard his friends gasp at his remark as Leah reared back as though slapped. Opening her mouth to retort, her words appeared stuck, and he smirked. Someone needed to put her in her place. Moving to go, he heard a strangled sob and turned back in time to see her quickly turn and hurry away.
Aiden, you arrogant prick, Caitlin began, while the others sputtered their outrage.
Throwing his hands up in defense, he was about to tell them of the conversation he had had with her at the ball field when he heard a scream. His head immediately swung in the direction of the sound. It was so full of agony and panic. A woman was standing with Leah, crying and waving her hands. Without thinking, he moved in their direction.
What's going on?
Tears running down her face, Leah turned and looked at him, unseeing.
Emily, she's gone. I have to find her.
Her eyes frantically searching the crowd, she started to move away from him, but he gripped her upper arms, halting her.
It'll be okay. Tell me what happened and we'll find her.
Judith's mom turned around and Emily was gone. She told Judith she wanted to find me. She's looking for me. I need to find her.
She tried to pull away again, but he held her steady. Her strident voice, full of anguish, cut through him. Looking around, he started to form a plan when Ginny approached and asked what Emily was wearing.
Pink shorts, pink tennis shoes, white shirt?
Mitch assured, we'll get the music stopped and have an announcement made over the loudspeakers.
No, no,
Leah cried, tears streaming down her face.
That won't work. She's deaf. She can't hear that clearly.
Jade, obviously knowing about Emily's special needs, rushed to Leah, pulling her in for a hug.
We'll find her, she said,
her eyes glancing around to the group that had jumped up, ready to search.
How does she communicate? Colt asked.
She has a hearing aid in her right ear, but is completely deaf in her left. She can hear if you speak on her right side, and she also reads lips. Loud noises are muffled, and if you approach her from the left, she won't hear you at all, she said,
her chest heaving with sobs.
Does she know not to talk to strangers? Mitch asked.
Yes,
Leah replied.
Good, that's good, Mitch assured her. Is there something we can tell her so she knows she can trust us?
Leah looked to Aiden, and his heart stuttered at the lost expression on her face.
You can tell her to hear Mommy's heartbeat.
Okay, don't worry, we'll find her.
Mitch, Colt, Hannah, Ginny, Grant, Lance, and Hunter all grabbed their police radios and immediately spread out in the crowd. Aiden's feet rooted to the ground for a moment, and he stared at Leah's ravaged face. Pain stabbed his heart at the realization he had completely misjudged her and her motives. Forcing his mind to clear of his fuck-up, he turned and raced away, determined to find Emily. As the group dispersed, Leah moved to follow them, but Jade held her back.
"What are you doing? I have to find Emily. This is the last place she knew you were. If she's moving and you're moving, you make it harder to find one another. You need to stay put."
Looking around at the crowd of comforting faces standing close by, she nodded. That made sense. Everyone was gone except for Tori and Caitlin, both holding their children, and Jade, whose arms were still around her. That was a lot of people looking for Emily.
"They'll find her," Caitlin promised, her eyes darting between her baby and Leah's face. "She's never wandered off before. She's always stayed right with me."
Tears started to choke her throat as she thought of all the possibilities.
"Oh, God, she wanted to find me, and now she's lost."
No matter what words her friends said, her heart screamed for her child. Stumbling back, she turned, saying,
"I can't just wait here and do nothing."
"No," Tori said, reaching out to grab her arm. "We've got tons of people looking for her. When they find her, they'll bring her here to you." Torn between wanting to search and wanting to be here for Emily, she hesitated. Breaking down in sobs, she cried,
"I want my baby. I need my baby."
Tori and Caitlin sobbed with her, clutching their children, as Jade's arms encircled her once more. Aiden's mind raced along with his feet as he searched the crowded park. His gaze landed on one of their friends also searching, but they shook their head as he made eye contact. Stopping, he forced his mind to clear. What did Leah say?
"She can't hear loud noises clearly."
Looking toward the speakers near the gazebo, he headed in the opposite direction. Sure that she would go where she might be able to hear better, he raced toward the back, not too far from the ice cream truck. Turning in a circle, he fought the desire to call out her name.
"Fuck, this is like searching for a needle in a haystack."
The crowds were standing near the food trucks, and he instinctively knew, as tiny as she was, she would want to get where she could see better. Turning, he ran past the picnic tables and circled around the far corner of the park where more people were sitting. A flash of pink caught his eye, and he turned to see a dark-headed child, her hair pulled into a ponytail with a big pink bow, moving away from him toward the edge of the crowd. Remembering her bow from the day at the ball field, he raced toward her, darting between families on blankets. Not wanting to scare her, he slowed his pace, making sure to approach her from the right. His heart pounded an erratic staccato as he quickly moved in front of her, squatting so that he would be at eye level. She jerked in surprise, her wide eyes full of fear.
"Hey, Emily," he said, unsure if he should speak differently to her.
But then he remembered she understood him at the ball field. Swallowing the lump in his throat, he smiled widely.
"Do you remember me from the ball game?"
She nodded, her eyes still wide.
"Mama said you were a coach."
"That's right. I helped the kids learn how to play the game. My name is Aiden. I think your mom is looking for you now."
She nodded, her pink bow bouncing up and down.
"I had ice cream with my friend, but wanted to find Mama."
Her chin wobbled, and she continued,
"But I don't know where she is."
"Can I take you to her? I promise I know where your mom is."
She took a step back, unsure.
"Mama said don't go with strangers."
"Your mom is very smart. She told me to tell you to listen for her heartbeat, so you would know it was okay to go with me."
She mulled that over, and her face relaxed. Sighing in relief, he said,
"Let's go find your mom."
She nodded enthusiastically, her eyes now full of hope. He held out his arms and asked,
"How about I carry you? We can get there quicker."
Without hesitation, her arms shot up toward his, and she allowed him to scoop her up.
"I got tired," she admitted.
Laying her head on his shoulder, his heart skipped another beat, but this time not in fear. This time, his heart filled with happiness as his arms held her slight body tightly. Looking ahead, his long legs made quick work of getting him to the other side of the park. As he approached the area,
He caught Mitch's eye, and his face broke out in a huge grin. He twisted his head just long enough to see Mitch on his radio, alerting the other law enforcement personnel that Emily had been found. Seeing Leah, her tears evident even from a distance, surrounded by Jillian, Caitlin, Tori, and Jade, he hastened his steps. Just as he was about to call out, Leah looked up, her gaze landing on him and then dropping to the precious bundle in his arms. "Emily!" she screamed, throwing her arms into the air and racing toward him. They slowed just enough to keep from slamming into each other and squishing Emily. He was ready to hand Emily off to her, but her arms surrounded him as well as her daughter. He could feel Leah's body sliding to the ground as her knees appeared to give out, so he knelt as well, the three of them slumping together. Feeling the sudden urge to comfort Leah, he managed to loosen one arm from Emily and throw it around her, pulling both of them into his embrace. Leah's body bucked with a sob as she held tightly to her daughter.
"Oh, baby, baby, I didn't know where you were."
Emily did not respond, and he was not sure if she was unable to hear her mother or just wanted to be held. He was barely aware that they were surrounded by a huge crowd of his friends and family, only the pats on the back he felt reminding him that they were not alone. Something about holding them, protecting them in this moment, changed something in him. He settled his ass to the ground, stretching out his legs, trying to make sure Leah and Emily were comfortable as Leah fought to control her tears. Not wanting to let either of them go, he was struck with how right they both felt in his arms. Chapter 7. After a few minutes, Leah gained control of herself and leaned back, her eyes on her daughter.
"Emily," she said, making sure she was looking at her, "never, never walk away from the adult you're with. You should have asked them to find me."
Emily nodded, tears still streaming down her face.
"I'm sorry," she hiccuped.
Belle squatted next to the trio and asked,
"Is she all right? Should I check her?"
She remembered that Belle was a nurse and, sucking in a deep breath, realized she needed to make sure Emily was fine. She loosened her arms and peered into her face.
"Baby, are you hurt?"
"No, Mama, I just went walking to find you."
Emily twisted around and looked back at Aiden, and her lips curved into a smile.
"You found my Mama."
His eyes were warm on her, and he grinned widely.
"Yeah, Emily, we found your Mama."
She watched as he lifted his warm gaze from her daughter to her, and her breath caught in her throat.
"Thank you," she whispered, her voice raspy with emotion. "If you hadn't..."
"No," he hushed gently, still holding her gaze. "She's fine. There were lots of people looking for her, and she would have been found very quickly."
"But,"
she began, her heart aching as fear returned. He shook his head and said,
"Leah, no, don't go there. She's fine, and in your arms. You can talk to her later about safety in a crowd, but don't go there in your mind. She's right here."
Gulping in a harsh breath of air, she nodded.
"Thank you."
Unable to look away, her eyes were mesmerized by his and the strength exuded by him. For the first time in a long time, a sense of safety swept over her.
"Mama, I'm squished."
Jerking back, she looked down at Emily and said,
"Well, young lady, getting squished is what happens when you get lost and Mama gets scared."
A giggle slipped from Emily's mouth, and to her it was pure heaven. Suddenly aware of Aiden's arms wrapped around her and her daughter, she blushed and struggled to move back. He stood and offered his hand to assist her up as well. Holding Emily's hand, she turned to see the gathering all standing close. Remembering how they immediately jumped in to help, she rushed to thank them as well. She was hugged by more people than she could remember ever being hugged by at one time. Eric McFarlane and his father, Finn, walked over, and after offering hugs, gave her a cold water bottle, which she drank thirstily from. For Emily, Finn handed her a tall, hand-squeezed lemonade in a frosty cup with a bright yellow straw. Corinne stepped forward and, with tears in her eyes, pulled her in for a hug, one lasting longer than the previous one she had been receiving. Before she had a chance to ponder that, Corinne released her and stepped to Aiden, her arms circling her son for a long time. That sight caused her chin to wobble once more, seeing this large, opinionated man being coddled by his mother,
and letting her do it in front of everyone. She battled back the tears, and, with a grateful smile toward everyone, she accepted a seat on one of their blankets, pulling Emily in close by her side.
"Aiden?"
Emily's voice cried out, drawing his immediate attention. He walked over and squatted in front of her. Hesitating, he amended,
"What do you need, pretty girl?"
Emily giggled and asked,
"Sit by us?"
Leah's eyes widened, but she smiled and nodded. He might have been a jerk to her on more than one occasion, but he saved her daughter today, and that meant something to her. He held her gaze for a moment and then smiled at Emily.
"Sure thing," he replied easily.
But instead of sitting on the other side of Emily, he lifted her up and plopped down on the blanket next to Leah with Emily in his lap. Leah looked down and realized his thigh was firmly pressed against hers. He did not seem to notice, or if he did, it did not bother him. At first, it did not bother her too much either. But the longer they sat side by side, the more she felt a tingle of electricity passing between them. She shifted slightly, but he only resettled Emily and shifted closer again, keeping his leg next to hers. After a few back-and-forths of that, he turned his head and grinned at her.
"Easy, Leah," he said, his voice soft. "You've been a wreck for the past half hour. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the music. Show Emily that you're fine and everything's okay."
She opened her mouth to retort, but snapped it shut, realizing he was right. Dropping her gaze to Emily, she saw her daughter was eating up the attention. Blowing out a long, slow breath, she nodded. Offering him a slight smile, she turned her focus back to the gathering and the music. Uncertain why he was being so nice to her all of a sudden, she wondered what he would think if he knew she was the master of pretending that everything was fine. After all, she had been doing just that for years. Aiden was aware the moment Emily fell asleep on him, her little body slumping in his arms and her head laying on his shoulder. He looked over at Leah, whose face was now relaxed as she laughed at something someone had said. Hearing a throat clearing, he cast his gaze to the side, seeing his mom, dad, and Finn smiling at him. Unable to explain the sudden desire to hold Emily and Leah close, he reacted by tossing them a typical goofy grin, but their continued smiles told him they were not buying his act. Rolling his eyes, he looked down and saw Emily's little mouth slack with sleep. He turned his head to the other side and watched Leah as she listened to Jillian telling a story. Dark circles marred her perfect complexion, and he knew she was exhausted. Her smile, while sincere, was strained. He felt her shoulder leaning against his, as though needing his body to help prop hers up. That intimate touch, even though she probably did not realize what she was doing, felt right. He had never cared for a woman's clinging touch in public, not wanting to claim anyone or be claimed. But sitting in the middle of a large group of his family and friends, having Leah and Emily pressed tightly to him, had his heart pounding, while at the same time, strangely, settling his mind. Leaning slightly to gain her attention, he whispered,
"Let's get you and Emily home."
She focused on his face for a few seconds before dropping her eyes to Emily, her features relaxing as her gaze roamed over her daughter's sleeping form.
"Oh, I'm sorry. You must be tired of holding her."
"Shh," he said, drawing her eyes back to his.
"She weighs nothing. And anyway, this isn't about me. You two have had an exciting and exhausting evening. We can leave now, and I can get you home before the crowd breaks up when the concert ends."
Her mouth opened as her brows drew down.
"You? I want to see you home safely," he said. "Please."
She sucked in her lips for a moment, eyes roaming over his face, assessing him. He waited patiently, and after a few seconds, she nodded and pushed upward to stand. He followed, shifting Emily slightly in his arms to balance her on his chest without jiggling her head too much. Ignoring the grins flying at him from all his friends and family, he offered a chin lift to his parents and waited patiently with Leah as she offered heartfelt thanks to everyone once again. Then, with Emily still asleep in his arms and Leah by his side, he weaved through the lawn chairs and blankets to the sidewalk around the park.
"I drove," she said, pointing to a small SUV. "We live just outside of town." "I got you," he replied, and with his hand on her lower back, guided her to the vehicle.
I'll follow you home.
She beeped her locks open and watched as he gently placed Emily in her booster seat.
Thank you for everything, Aiden. I've got it from here.
Leah, he said, drawing her attention. I know you can do it all yourself, but please, let me see you and Emily home.
She looked skeptical, like she was trying to figure out why he was doing any of this. It was a question he was asking himself, to be honest. It just felt right. When she nodded, he let out a breath he had not realized he was holding.
My truck is just down the street. Let me get behind you so I can follow, okay?
She nodded again, and he reached out, placing his hand on her arm, giving a comforting squeeze.
See you there.
Jogging across the street to his truck, he felt sure of what he was doing, a feeling unfamiliar to him. Leah glanced into the rearview mirror, first to check to see that Emily was still asleep, and then to see if Aiden's headlights were still in her sight. They were. She sucked in a breath, wondering what she was doing.
He's being polite. He wants to make sure that his rescue of Emily does not go awry by my falling asleep at the wheel.
She couldn't really come up with any other reasons for him to be doing what he was doing now, let alone why he had sat so close to her on the blanket, or why his arms had stayed tight around Emily all night, as if fearful of losing her again. Since meeting him, her thoughts about him had swirled from incredulity at his arrogance to irritation at his judgmental attitude to thankful that he had found Emily and was really good to her. Too exhausted to consider the emotional whiplash, she turned into her driveway. Stepping from her vehicle, she waved to him, indicating that she was good and he could go home content in the knowledge that she was safe. Instead of driving on, though, she watched as he pulled into her driveway behind her and turned off his truck engine. Before she knew what was happening, he got out and walked to Emily's door, bending to unfasten her from the booster seat. Gently lifting her, he moved to where she was standing, mouth open and frozen still.
Go on, he encouraged. Unlock the front door and I'll get her in.
Blinking out of her stunned silence, she turned and hustled up the steps, doing as he said. Stepping inside, he looked at her and cocked his head to the side. Nodding, she headed up the stairs, hearing his footsteps coming behind her. The small house only had two bedrooms, and she led him through the door on the right. She watched as he bent and placed Emily on her bed. Turning, he said,
I'll let you get her ready.
Placing her hand on his arm, she lifted her gaze to his, her chest heaving with so many different emotions.
Thank you, was all she could think to say.
He smiled and walked out of the room, his booted steps moving down the stairs. Alone at last, she blew out her breath and turned to her daughter. Slipping off Emily's sandals and shorts, she gently pulled her pajama bottoms up over her legs. Emily opened her eyes, blinking several times before seeming to realize where she was.
Let's go to the bathroom, sweetie, she encouraged.
Emily nodded and padded into the bathroom and quickly finished her business. Taking the toothbrush she handed to her, she brushed her teeth and then moved straight back to her bed. Following her, she pulled her blouse off and placed her pajama top over her head, weaving her arms through the sleeves. Tucking her in, she knelt by the bed, kissing her forehead.
We'll talk in the morning, okay?
Emily's eyes widened, and she asked,
Am I in trouble?
No, baby, but we need to make sure you understand the rules when I'm not around, okay? What you did tonight was scary, and could have ended up in a not-so-good way. Emily nodded, but then smiled.
I like Aiden. He found me.
Ignoring the mixed-up feelings circling around her insides at hearing Aiden's name, she smiled in return.
All those good people went immediately to look for you, sweetheart. But yes, Aiden found you.
Emily yawned, and, deciding their talk was over for now, she pulled the covers up and kissed her once more. Turning out the light, she closed the door and leaned back against it, exhausting emotions pouring over her. The what-ifs were slamming into her mind, and she felt a sob in the back of her throat threatening to choke her. The quiet house seemed to close in around her, and she walked down the stairs, thinking the bottle of wine in her refrigerator was definitely calling to her. At the bottom of the stairs, she stumbled at the sight of Aiden in her living room, standing at the mantel and staring at the photograph of her and newborn Emily.
Oh, I thought you'd left,
she said, her eyes moving over him. Now that she had seen Emily cradled in his arms, it was hard not to think of him as her hero. God, I am tired, she chastised herself. Crossing her arms around her waist in a protective stance, she considered whether or not she should offer him a drink. She had two different images of him now, and she wasn't sure which one was the real Aiden. Maybe both were. Taking a deep breath, she asked, I was going to get a glass of wine. Would you like one? Or, a beer? As soon as the words left her mouth, she wondered what she was doing. But before she had a chance to rescind the offer, his smile widened, and he nodded. Thanks, a beer would be great, he replied. Turning, before she lost her nerve, she moved through the Eden kitchen, opened the refrigerator, and pulled out the wine and beer. Pouring a glass and popping off the top of the beer, she walked back into her small living room. He took the beer from her hands and took a swig. He seemed to be waiting on her, so she moved to the chair and nodded her head toward the sofa in silent invitation. I know you said it wasn't necessary, but I would be remiss if I didn't say, once more, how grateful I am that you found Emily. He acknowledged her thanks, but deferred by saying, I was just lucky. There were lots of people who were looking for, lots of people here in this town who care. Gulping another large sip of wine, she nodded. It's nice, having lots of people who care. That's not something I'm very used to, she admitted. The wine was already easing through her frazzled nerves, not only relaxing her body, but, obviously, relaxing her usually private emotions. Didn't you have a lot of friends where you used to live, before you moved to Baytown? She noticed that he had not drunk much of his beer, but she swallowed another large sip of wine. Offering a slight shrug, she admitted, When we first lived near the base, I was surrounded with other military wives. After Emily was born, my life became increasingly more and more about her and her needs. She caught him stealing a quick glance at her finger and shook her head. Not married anymore. My husband was a Marine, but he was killed in action. It's just been me and Emily for, well, her whole life, really. He nodded, his gaze steady, and said, You're a really good mom, Leah, and it shows in everything you do for her. I was wrong earlier to think otherwise. I'm sorry for that. They sat in comfortable silence for a few minutes, each to their own thoughts while they finished their drinks. Now, more relaxed than she had been in hours, she was about to suggest he leave so that she could go to bed, when he startled her with his next statement. I'm very sorry about your husband's death. I was also a Marine, and feel a kinship with any others who served and their families. She had no idea why she spoke the words she said, but before she could stop herself, she bit out, I know he was a hero to his fellow Marines and a hero to his country, but not to me. To me, he was not a hero. He was simply a man, and not a very good one at that. Chapter 8 Stunned at Leah's words and honesty, Aiden watched the play of emotions cross her face. Anger quickly morphed into embarrassment, and he hated that for her. Don't do that, he admonished. You have a right to feel whatever feelings you have inside of you, and never let anyone tell you that you don't. She blinked, and her mouth opened, but no words came forth. Tell me about him, he prodded, desperately wanting to know more about her now that he understood all his preconceived notions were wrong. Somehow he knew that her complicated feelings for her deceased husband held the key. Sure that she would not normally open up to someone who was essentially a stranger, he hoped she felt the tentative bond forming between them and would trust him to have a care. Her shoulders slumped as though in fatigue, and he was about to tell her it was okay, they would talk another time, when she set her now empty wine glass on the coffee table, leaned back in her seat, tucking her legs up under her, and offered, There's not much to tell, and I can't imagine why you would be interested. He leaned forward and, mimicking her actions, set his beer bottle on the coffee table as well. Honestly, I look at you and see a beautiful, smart woman who's a good mother. I made a horrible assumption when we first met, and I regret that. I misunderstood the meaning behind your words about Emily, but that's no excuse. I made a snap judgment, and just like I don't like others judging me when they don't know me, I shouldn't have done that. She did not reply, but held his gaze in silence. He continued,
Tonight, I saw a strong mother who went through agony at the thought that something had happened to her child. I saw strength in you, and in the bond that you have with Emily.
His forearms rested on his knees, open slightly, with his palms turned up.
I can't imagine any man who would not be doing everything he could to keep you and Emily in his life, so I admit I'm curious.
They continued in silence for several minutes, and he was willing to give her as much time to gather her thoughts as needed. Just when it looked like she was going to deny his request to talk, she heaved a great sigh and spoke.
We met at a picnic some friends were holding, and I thought it was love at first sight. He was tall, strong, handsome, and he looked at me as though I were the only woman in the room. He was already a Marine, and I suppose we knew we were on borrowed time. We'd only dated for 6 months when he popped the question, and I eagerly agreed to be his wife. We were young, in love, and very happy. We talked about having children, and sure enough, right before he was sent away for a 1-year tour, I got pregnant with Emily. We were ecstatic, even though he was leaving, and that meant I'd be going through it all alone. We Skyped as much as we could, of course, but it was still just me. After Emily was born, I threw myself into being her mom. After my maternity leave was up, I went back to work part-time at the accounting firm I was with, and my mom watched Emily the 3 days a week I was at work. Carl and I emailed and Skyped as often as possible. I know he was proud, because every time we were Skyping, he would gather his squad members behind him and have me hold Emily up so they could all ooh and ah over her. He watched as her eyes slid to the side, her gaze unfocused as she stared out into the room. He could tell she was miles away and remained quiet, giving her time to sift through memories he assumed she may have pushed away. She looked down at her hands, and he noted they were clenched in her lap. The desire to reach over and hold them moved through him, but he did not want to make her feel uneasy. His curiosity had turned into concern, and he could not remember the last time he had felt this way about a woman he had just met, or any woman, really. But there was something about her, a vulnerability lying under the strength, that called to him. By the time Emily was a year old, it was obvious that something was not right. A loud noise on her left side would not cause her to startle or even turn her head. I was concerned about her hearing, but knew that she was not completely deaf, because if I spoke toward her right ear, she would look up at me and smile. She babbled the way babies should, but her doctor did early testing and determined that she was deaf in her left ear and had partial hearing in her right. I was devastated, but also determined to do everything I could to assist Emily with her hearing and her speech.
And your husband?
Snorting, she shook her head. At first, when I would try to talk to him about it when we were Skyping, he would cut me off and tell me that I did not know what I was talking about. But over time, he no longer gathered people behind him and did not even want to talk to her. When his tour was over and he came home, I could tell he was starting to see what I'd been saying, and I was relieved. I finally thought everything was going to be all right. The burden that I had carried by myself could now be shared with her father. He could go to the doctor's appointments with me. He would be able to talk to the specialists as well. It did not take long for me to realize that the more I tried to push him to be with Emily, the more he pulled away from both of us.
What an ass, he thought, but remained silent.
Glancing down, he realized his fists were clenched in a similar manner to hers, and he released them, stretching his fingers. I had gone to the key wives' meetings. Those were for Marine wives, so I knew it was very common for families to have a difficult transition when the military member came back to the home. I told myself he was simply having trouble adjusting. I told myself that, as a Marine, he always wanted the best, and he struggled with Emily because he felt as though there should be something he could do to make it better. I kept telling myself that as soon as he became accustomed to how we needed to work with her and communicate with her, it would be better. She lifted her gaze to him and shook her head sadly. But it simply wasn't happening. He finally told me that he had re-upped for another tour in Afghanistan because it was too difficult for him to deal with a wife that was spending so much of her time and energy on their child that had special needs. Unable to help himself, he jumped to his feet and stalked toward the fireplace, resting his fist on top of the mantel.
Fucking hell, he ground out,
barely remembering at the last second to keep his voice down, because Emily was sleeping above.
What a fucking prick!
Hating that he lost control of his emotions, he quickly turned and his gaze landed on Leah, sure that he would see censure in her eyes. Instead, to his surprise, her lips were curved in a slight smile.
"I always thought the same thing," she confessed.
Pulling in a ragged breath of air, he let it out slowly. Moving back to the sofa, he sat down, this time much closer to her chair, so that their knees touched.
"I'm sorry, but just the thought of him leaving you and your sweet daughter makes no sense to me."
"Thank you for that. It was so hard because everyone else treated him as such a hero, a Marine's Marine. Only I knew the truth. He was not running toward a battle, but running away from one." For the next year, he rarely wrote and did not Skype one single time. I finally received an email from him where he said that he thought it was best if we separated. He admitted that I was a good mother, but felt that I was no longer a wife that could be 100% supportive of him. When I asked him about Emily, his reply was that while he loved his daughter, he had no idea how to communicate with her, did not want to learn sign language, and that it was too distracting for him to take time away from his job to focus on her. As he watched Leah tell her story, the slight smile she had fell away. Each breath seemed to take more out of her, and once again her shoulders slumped.
"You know he was fucked, don't you?"
Her lips twitched again, and he was glad. She nodded and said, "Yes, I know he was fucked." Sighing, she continued, "I moved out of my apartment and back in with my parents. Emily was actually doing very well with learning language mixed in with some hand signals. It was not American Sign Language, but the combination worked for her as she continued to learn to speak. I was still working at the accounting firm and spending every spare moment with Emily. I assumed that when Carl came home, he would file for divorce. I wavered between thinking that I wanted to take him to the cleaners and not having anything to do with him." Shrugging, she added, "In the end, it didn't matter. He was killed in action, still married to me. I know in my head that he truly was the Marine hero that everyone made him out to be, but I also know in my heart he was a deserter to his family."
"And you suffered in silence."
It was a statement, not a question. It was obvious that she had gone through the motions of becoming a war widow, which meant being forced to accept all the glories heaped upon her husband, while knowing he had abandoned her and Emily.
"My parents were the only ones who knew. So I just kept moving forward. I had my accounting job, and Emily was enrolled in preschool and doing well there. Not long ago, I learned of Mr. Redding's retirement causing a job opening to be here in Baytown. I couldn't pass that up. I yearned for something new, a place where no one knew of Carl, a place where Emily and I could start over. And with my parents just 30 minutes away in Virginia Beach, I thought this was perfect."
He finally gave in to the urge and reached over to cover her hands with his. Her fingers were cold, and he rubbed them gently, hoping to infuse some warmth.
"I'm so sorry for misjudging you when we met," he said. "I have no idea why I did. I'm not usually like that."
She shrugged and said, "You don't have to apologize anymore. To be fair, I did the same to you. I had seen your, flirtatious behavior and overheard comments made by Caitlin and Brogan, so when you approached me at the ball game, I wasn't the nicest. I decided the kind of person you were based on one thing, and that was not fair of me either." He grinned and stood. With her hands still in his, he gently pulled her to her feet. She stared up at him, tilting her head to the side.
"I think we should start over."
Dropping her hands, he lifted his right hand out and said,
"Hello, my name is Aiden McFarlane. Pleased to meet you."
A giggle slipped from between her lips, and she lifted her hand, placed it in his palm, and gave him a firm shake.
"I'm Amelia Smith, but my friends call me Leah. I'm pleased to make your acquaintance also."
He did not let go of her hand, but instead drew her closer to him. He watched her smile slip as her eyes lifted and searched his.
"Now we can start anew. No more misunderstandings, no more misjudgments."
With that, he wrapped his arms around her, offering a hug. She hesitated for only a few seconds before sliding her hands around his waist and resting her cheek against his chest. He felt her body relax, and before he could think about it, he kissed the top of her head. Her body, lined up with his and snugly wrapped in his embrace, felt right. Once more, he was struck with how differently he felt and acted around her. He had never offered just comfort and friendship to a woman that he was attracted to in the past, but in this moment, he gave no thought to taking it further, only wanting to offer what she needed right now.
After a few minutes, they slowly separated, and he held her gaze.
"Thank you for sharing your story with me," he said. "And as much as I'd love to continue to sit and talk with you, you truly look exhausted, and I know Emily will need you in the morning."
She nodded and escorted him to the front door. Opening it wide, she looked up and he leaned forward, placing his hand gently on the curve of her waist and kissing her forehead. When he pulled back, he realized he might have been too touchy-feely with her, but the soft smile on her face said it was all right. Smiling in return, he headed out of her house and down to his truck. A strange sense of rightness filled him, and he could not wait to see her again. That night, lying in bed, Leah was filled with a sense of contentment. It had been such a relief to unburden her complicated feelings for Carl to someone who did not judge her harshly. She had been surprised at how understanding Aiden had been. Rolling over in bed, she sighed. It had been a long time since she had had any friends, and now it appeared that Baytown offered a wealth of them. It had also been a long time since she had spent any time with a man in anything other than a professional relationship. And now it appeared that Baytown was offering that as well, with Aiden. Chapter 9. Leah sat at her desk Monday morning, still exhausted from the weekend's anxiety. She and Emily had spent all day Sunday together, and while she had gone over the rules for when she and Emily became separated, she did not want to make that their entire day. So together, they had watched Disney movies, baked cookies, and spent hours cuddled up on the sofa. Even though it had been a good day, she was still tired from not sleeping well. Images of Emily wandering, lost, had filled her mind, only to be replaced by the sight of Aiden striding toward her, with Emily tucked safely in his arms. Shaking off the thoughts, she got back to work. She managed to get halfway through the files for Finn's Pub when Mrs. Markham called on the intercom.
"Miss Smith, Mayor Banks has called to say that he would like to stop by at 1 o'clock this afternoon. You don't have another appointment, so may I tell him that you will be available?"
Nodding, she agreed. "Yes, that will be fine." Self-conscious about her appearance, she glanced down at her attire. Always one to dress professionally, she had on black pants and a simple silk blouse today, not feeling the desire to wear anything fancier. With flats on her feet instead of her usual heels, she felt at a disadvantage knowing the mayor was coming. "Oh well, this is Baytown, and everyone keeps telling me that things are more laid back here. I guess this is my chance to see if that's true." Looking at the clock on her desk, she noted that it was almost noon. She had grabbed a yogurt on the way out this morning, but now wondered if she could make a trip to the pub for one of their sandwiches. Of course, the idea of seeing Aiden again did not make that an unattractive choice. Before she had a chance to decide, Mrs. Markham's voice came across the intercom again.
"Miss Smith, Aiden McFarlane is here with your lunch. Should I send him back, or would you like him to leave it with me?"
Her heart leaped at hearing he had come to see her, and she was surprised at the giddiness in her voice when she replied, "Yes, please, have him come back, thank you." It had been a long time since she had felt the spark of excitement at seeing a man, but had no chance to prepare before Aiden stepped through her door. Just like the last time he was here, his hair was brushed back and his blue eyes were shining. This time, though, his smile brightened her day. His Finn's Pub t-shirt pulled tight across his chest, and it was impossible not to notice his bulging arms. As her gaze drifted downward, she smiled too, observing a large plastic sack that she knew contained a delicious lunch held in his grip. "Wow," she exclaimed, rising from her chair. "To what do I owe this surprise visit?"
"I just couldn't wait to see you again," he replied, stepping forward and placing the bag on her table.
She laughed and said, "That's honest and very sweet."
"If you really want to know," he said, "I've given a lot of insincere flattery over the years, but with you I find myself just wanting to be honest."
She smiled in reply, but remained silent, leaning over to peer into the bag as he began pulling out the contents. 2 wrapped sandwiches, a container filled with fresh-cut French fries, 2 slices of cheesecake with raspberry sauce drizzled on top, and 2 cans of soda.
Oh my goodness, you really did bring a full lunch. And since I see two of everything, am I to assume that you're going to stay and eat with me?
I'd love to, if you don't mind.
She held his gaze for a moment, feeling at ease with his presence in her office and the sweet gesture of lunch.
Let's get out of this little office and use the conference room.
Together, they scooped up all the lunch items and carried them into the other room, setting them around the conference table. Within a few minutes, they were both enjoying the delicious food, as well as each other's company. Aiden laughed as he told the antics of he, Brogan, and Caitlin as little kids growing up in Baytown. As Leah encouraged, he threw in some stories about the Baytown boys, loving the way her face lit up when she smiled. It was hard to imagine that he had ever seen her as a stuck-up, uptight person, when the reality was that she was warm, friendly, and had a great sense of humor. Her beauty held his attention as well, her curves barely hidden under the blouse and pants she wore. She wore subtle makeup, and her long hair was pulled back from her face, both exemplifying her clear skin. Surprised to see her in flats instead of heels, their height difference was more pronounced, and he towered over her, making him feel like a protector. He recognized that was a caveman attitude, so he wisely kept that idea to himself. He liked seeing her relaxed and enjoying herself.
When was the last time I sat with a woman that I was interested in, for the pure enjoyment of just being in their company?
The fact that he could not answer his own silent question made him ashamed.
So, I've been talking, now it's your turn.
Eyes wide, she exclaimed, "My turn? I think I did enough confessing on Saturday night to last a lifetime." He shook his head.
"Nah, that was about the last couple of years. Tell me something about the Leah from long ago."
She bit her bottom lip and rolled her eyes, definitely not knowing how seductive that little maneuver was to him. He inwardly groaned, but kept his eyes focused on her face, hoping she would talk.
"I was born and raised in Virginia Beach," she began. "My dad was a civilian who worked for the Marine Aviation Training. I have one older sister who's married to her high school sweetheart, and they have three children. My mom worked for many years in daycare, so she was a perfect choice to be able to take care of Emily when I went back to work."
He lifted an eyebrow.
"Seriously? That's all you've got? I tell you about dropping a crab into the middle of Caitlin and Jillian's tea party when they were 5 years old, and you tell me where your dad worked? I tell you that Brogan and I were running from one of the farmers after having nabbed some of his watermelons out of his field, and I got my pants caught on the barbed wire fence, and you tell me you have a married older sister? Somehow I don't think our stories are quite the same."
She giggled and said, "Are you calling me boring?" He leaned back in his chair and stretched his long legs in front of him, crossing one booted foot over the other.
"No, ma'am, I'd never call you boring. But I do think you've got some stories you are hiding."
"Well, I once challenged my sister to a tree climbing contest. I was determined to win, even though my face got all scratched up in the process."
He looked at the tiny scar running through her eyebrow, and she saw his unasked question. Laughing, she touched it self-consciously and said, "Yes, this is my reminder."
"So you were daring."
"And kind of competitive," she admitted. "There was this one time that my sister and I were playing darts and she beat me. I was a sore loser and it made me angry, so I threw my remaining dart toward her feet. I never came close to hitting her, but she jumped back screaming anyway."
With a grin on his face, he said,
"So there's a temper behind that professional countenance. Should I be concerned?"
"Well, the last time I was in Finn's, I did notice a dartboard near the front."
"Is that an invitation for us to play?"
he asked, loving the light now shining in her eyes.
"And what happens if I win?"
She threw her head back and laughed heartily.
"I suppose we'll just have to play, and then you'll find out."
"It's a date," he said.
Her smile remained at the turn of phrase, but in truth he wanted it to be more than that. Uncharacteristically nervous at the prospect of asking her out, he cleared his throat.
"Speaking of dates, I'd really like to take you on one."
His hands gripped the arms of the chair, fighting the urge to wipe his sweaty palms on his pants. Staring at her face, he held his breath as he awaited her answer.
"A date?"
she asked, a crease settling in her brow as though uncertain what the word meant.
"Yeah, a date. You know, where I drive to your house and pick you up and take you somewhere nice to eat."
I, I don't know, I haven't been on a date for over 7 years.
She grimaced and said, That makes me sound like such a loser, doesn't it?
He hated that she felt that.
Not at all. You were a devoted wife and are a devoted mother.
She smiled, but didn't say anything, and it occurred to him that this might be her letting him down gently. It had been a long time since he had had to work so hard to get someone to go out with him. In fact, it had been a really long time since he had actually asked a woman out on a date that was not just a casual hookup. He opened his mouth to crack a joke to relieve the tension of her turning him down, but she spoke first.
I'd love to go on a date with you, Aiden, she said. There's a teenage girl that lives across the street from me that babysits when I need her. I'd need to give her a couple of days' notice to make sure that she could watch Emily.
His breath left his lungs in a whoosh, and his smile widened.
Good, good. Do you think you should give me your phone number so that we can settle on the details once you know when you can get a babysitter?
She pulled out her phone, and they quickly exchanged numbers. Feeling lighter than air, he stood and grabbed all the trash from their lunch, shoving it back into the plastic bag. She rose from her seat as well and